When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
The schedule has landed. Yes, we know the Oilers' schedule for the upcoming season. Of course, the preseason games were announced a few days ago. Full regular season schedule for the NHL put out around 4:30 this afternoon. First game for the Oilers is at home. Start of a three-game homestand Wednesday, October 13th. They will be taking on the Vancouver Canucks. The Seattle Kraken, their first regular season appearance in Edmonton, will be Monday, November 1st. The Toronto Maple Leafs coming to town in December. That'll be on December 14th. The Montreal Canadiens, the Stanley Cup finalists from the season that ended a few weeks ago. They're going to be at Rogers Place on Saturday, March 5th. Now, a couple of things to note here about the schedule. It does include an Olympic break. So if you look at the Oilers' schedule in February, they play on February 2nd and then don't have another game until February 23rd. Now, here's the thing. The NHL saying today is that there is nothing finalized for NHL players to go to the Winter Olympics. So if that does not happen, the NHL would then put out a revised schedule. But right now, there is an Olympic break, and it makes kind of a quirk here for Edmonton, because they obviously wouldn't be playing much in February, and they would go over a month without a home game. They would play at home on January 26th and not play at home again until March 5th. In between that time, they would have the Olympic break and they would have 8 road games. Obviously not an 8-game road trip since it's broken up by the Olympic break, but there's one thing to remember. They also have 8 consecutive road games in the holiday season, and that's because the World Junior Tournament will be taking over Rogers Place. So before Christmas, the 22nd and 23rd, the Oilers go to LA and San Jose, and then from the 27th to January 5th, they're away for 6 consecutive games, including New Year's Eve at the New Jersey Devils, and then New Year's Day at the New York Islanders. So those are some of the highlights. A couple of 6-game homestands for the Oilers. They have one in December and one in March. They do have 5 consecutive road games as well in November, kind of around that rodeo time, even though the rodeo no longer in Edmonton. And even if it were, it would not be in the building that the Oilers play in, but they still kind of have their traditional rodeo road trip. Some of the highlights there: Battle of Alberta, 4 meetings against the Calgary Flames. It's in Edmonton October 16th. It's in Edmonton January 22nd. It is at Calgary, the one game I already mentioned, December 27th. And then again in Calgary on March 26th. The final game of the year is a home game, April 28th. Again, the schedule going deep into April because of the Olympic break. It'll be San Jose in town. The season actually ends on the 29th, so the Oilers will not play on the actual final day of the regular season. That's some of the highlights for you. Again, Seattle here, November 1st, first time the Seattle Kraken will be regular season visitors at Rogers Place, and the home opener. It's a 3-game homestand to start the season: October 13th, Vancouver; October 16th, Calgary; and October 19th, the Anaheim Ducks. And of course, you're going to be back. Fans will be back in the building starting with the preseason, which begins for Edmonton in Calgary September 26th, home game September 28th against Seattle. Some of the highlights there, you can go to the story on 630ched.com, globalnews.ca, and get some more of the details. And the Oilers website breaks everything down for you as well. Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. My name is Reed Wilkins. It's Inside Sports on Oilers and Elks Radio 630 CHED. And don't forget, we got an Elks game coming up on August 7th. We are slowly getting there. They will kick off their 14-game regular season against the Ottawa Red Blacks. The Elks putting out some photos today on social media, kind of the whole picture day when the players do the photos for all the promotional material, and when they put guys up on the scoreboard and all those types of things. They do have the new helmets with the antlers. the jerseys are mostly the same, except the numbers are white instead of gold. The names and numbers are white instead of gold. That really stuck out to me today as I was looking at that. And also, you have to remember, the jerseys are going to change next year. And Chris Presson, the president of the team, has said with, you know, the pandemic and everything and, you know, the team being not having the funds they usually would, that there'll be kind of another unveiling of jerseys for next season. They did the name this year. They did the helmet. They did the logo. And there will be more to come. And the jersey will be refined. So for now, the jersey looks a lot like it did before, except the name and number white instead of gold on the back. So there's something going on with the Edmonton Elks. I should mention as well, just to wrap up the thought here on the Oilers schedule, the Seattle Kraken only come to Rogers Place once. That game I mentioned on November 1st, that is going to be the only visit. With the league expanding, and now it's 4 8-team divisions, the Oilers will play some teams in their division four times. Couple of teams, Anaheim, Seattle, they're only going to play three times. So if you want to see Seattle in town, at least in the regular season, you will only have that one opportunity. So just a note to remember there. You can follow me on Twitter at Reid Wilkins, R-E-I-D-W-I-L-K-I-N-S. You can email me, insidesports@630ched.com. And that number to call or text, if you so desire, 780-496-0063. When you use the old telephone, you're using the hotline presented by CertainTeed, professional-grade building materials. All right, so we have a lot of Oilers notes to get to today besides the schedule. And again, go to the website if you want to look at all the games and get all the details. The start times for the games have not all been announced. So that's another thing that's going to have to be released. But Ken Holland spoke today in advance of the draft. The first round is tomorrow. We'll have coverage for you right here on 630 Ched. Our draft special is on from 5 to 9. The first pick going to be just after 6 o'clock. Bob Stauffer and I will have it for you. And then additional coverage of rounds 2 through 7 will be 10 to noon on Saturday. So the Oilers will have the 19th selection. And General Manager Ken Holland commented on who he'd prefer to take at number 19.
You know, I would say that we're probably won't draft a defenseman. Probably. You know, you never know if somebody... You know, you do your ratings, Jason. Our scouts have been in here. I mean, they've been at it now for the last month with Zoom calls. They've been here all week. Tyler Wright, Bob Green, and, you know, Jim Cross and Mitch Holmgren have been talking to our guys in Europe. You know, we've got our overall list from, you know, one to, you know, the first round. You know, if a defenseman that's, you know, high up on our board slides to 19, we'll probably take him. But I think if things go the way that we think they're going to go, I see us probably taking a forward. But again, you never know. I mean, if we got a defenseman at 18 and we're picking 19 and probably lean towards a forward, obviously we're going to take the best player available. Certainly with having Bouchard and Broberg, Samarukov, and there's some other young defensemen, and you know, we got some younger defensemen on our team. It would make us lean towards forwards, but we'll see.
Now, we didn't say anything about goaltenders there. There's a lot of speculation. Could Sebastian Cosa from the Edmonton Oil Kings be available at number 19, and would the Oilers be interested? I would think the Oilers would be interested. Obviously, the later you pick, the more moving pieces there are. But if, as Holland said, if everything goes how he thinks it'll go, then he thinks it's more likely there's going to be a forward there. I've seen some mock drafts that have Cosa going 19th to the Oilers. I think I've seen him going as high as 11 or 12. It could depend where Jesper Wallstedt, the excellent Swedish goaltender, gets picked. If a team's looking for a goalie and then Wallstedt's off the board, they may have to jump up and take Cosa. I think forward is a fair expectation, but I'm going to be really curious to see what the Oilers do if Sebastian Cosa is sitting there in their slot. Holland was also asked today, would you trade that first rounder?
Well, the first round pick won't be in play on a rental. You know, I guess more so on a hockey trade, would it be? Yes. But I don't see us using it in a rental. Ryan, part of being my feeling is part of being good in a cap world is you need younger players, you know, cheaper players. That's a part of the puzzle. So that's certainly what that's what these first round picks and young prospects do. They give you the, you know, maybe not today, but next year at some point in time, that's a part of the solution. So would I trade our first round pick between tonight and tomorrow night? I guess if there was a deal there that I thought made sense, yeah. Today, right now, I've got nothing going with our first round pick. So I'm not sure if that answers it. So would I trade the first round pick? Yeah, but I don't see it just for a little to have a little excitement for a short period of time.
All right. I wouldn't trade the first round pick just to have a little excitement for a short period of time. A little bit there from Ken Holland looking ahead to tomorrow's draft. Let's look back to yesterday's expansion draft. Adam Larson signed and then claimed by the Seattle Kraken, 4 years, $4 million per season. The Oilers were right there with the money on the deal. Larson deciding to depart. So I asked Ken Holland if he could kind of summarize how the negotiations had gone with Larson.
You know, we started in the middle of January, so about the middle of February, I reached out to his agent, J.P. Barry, told him that I would like to sign him. You know, we talked. Somewhere on the road trip, I remember sitting down with Adam for an hour. I don't know, maybe it was one night in Calgary. You know, told him that we wanted to sign him, wanted him back. Like all negotiations, you know, looked at, you know, what the marketplace was for, you know, the type of player that he is, you know, the recent contracts, you know, and there was probably, I don't know, 10 or 12. You know, I made an offer probably in March, you know, talked through April, you know, JP and I kind of talked, then sometime probably in April, JP and Adam told me that they would like to shut it down until the end of the season, and then we picked up. I thought we were very close to a deal. That was the indication that J.P. Barry gave me a month ago, and then sort of time went by, and I asked, you know, J.P. where things were at, and he said that, you know, Adam just wanted to really be sure of his decision, really wanted to know what his options were, and JP told him that he wouldn't really know his options until the 28th of July. Then I made three or four or five different offers through July, I guess, through June and July, you know, and then I added a year and ultimately about a week ago, I went to J.P. Barry and said that if Adam needed an opportunity to explore the market, I gave him the green light to, you know, and sent him an email giving him the green light to talk to other teams so that he could know what his options were in the hopes that he would find that his best option was in Edmonton. And then obviously woke up to a text early yesterday morning from J.P. Barry saying that the night before Adam had decided and agreed to a deal with Seattle.
Yeah, so as I touched on yesterday, I think some genuine surprise in the Oilers organization that this didn't work out with Adam Larson, as you kind of got from what Ken Holland just said. It seemed like there were numerous points along the way where they seemed close to having a deal, and Adam Larson ultimately decided to hold off and then look around, and now he's gone. So there is the latest on that. Mike Smith is coming back. What's going on with Zach Hyman? And how would you feel about that? I am really curious. I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about a few different players over the last few weeks. 2 years for Mike Smith. No, the Oilers have not put out the official statement on it yet, but they are working on that. And Holland did confirm it during the news conference today. And if you're going for Hyman, for how long and for how much money? Because it seems like if the Oilers were going for Hyman, it would be for a pretty long time. 780-496-0063. Back after the break. right. Thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. 780-496-0063. Got a text here from an anonymous texter who says, instead of Zach Hyman, how about going all in on Alexander Ovechkin? How would you like that? Wouldn't that be fun? Have Ovechkin for a year or two with the Edmonton Oilers? I mean, he's still one of the top, what, three goal scorers in the game? Certainly top five. You know, I think the assumption there, and I imagine that texter is having some fun. To me, that's kind of one of those fantasy hockey situations. I think the assumption there is that he'll stay with the Washington Capitals, who he's played his entire career with. But that would be something if Ovechkin said, I'm coming to Edmonton. I'm coming for a year or two. And I'm just going to stand there and shoot the puck, taking passes from McDavid and Draisaitl. But I think Zach Hyman is a more realistic target for the Edmonton Oilers. So with Mike Smith, it's a two-year deal, going to be around $2 million per season. I certainly understand the question, why 2 years for a 39-year-old goaltender? Well, I think coming off a very strong season, Smith wanted 2 years. I mean, why not? If you're the athlete, play as long as you can, get as much money as you can. I guess here's the thing. If Ken Holland holds firm on saying, I just want you for a year, and Mike Smith says, well, then I'm going to look around and gets a contract somewhere else, whether it's for a year or two or just one he likes better, then how are you feeling about Mikko Koskinen as your goaltender? So I think that's probably why Smith got the 2 years, though I get it. He's an older player. You wonder about contract length at that point in his career. All right. We will welcome Gord Stellick to the show. For more on Zach Hyman, I'll get to some of your feedback as well. Some more text starting to roll in. More Inside Sports ahead. With you tomorrow. We're going to call it our draft coverage, though, from 5 to 9. Bob Stauffer and I will be on the air, and then 10 to noon on Friday to keep you updated on rounds 2 through 7. The Oilers do not have a pick in round 2, don't have a pick in round 3. We'll see if that could change. You never know if there might be a trade or two along the way. As we know, over the last few years, draft time is often more exciting than trade deadline time for some of the marquee trades. We'll see if that plays out again this weekend. Got a special guest standing by. Just quickly, I want to read some texts here because it'll lead nicely into my next guest. Terry writes in. He says, I'm a Leaf fan, but I love listening to your show. Well, Terry, thanks for that. He says, Zach Hyman is a heck of a player. I was hoping the Leafs would re-sign him, but not on an 8-year deal at $5 or more million. His knee injury worries me. Hope he does work out for the Oilers. Now, again, he is not an Edmonton Oiler at the moment, though it could be going in that direction. Former D-man Mark says, here's the issue I have with Zach Hyman. He's 29. Edmonton seems to want to sign him for 7 or 8 years. The cap of 5.5 or slightly years at or slightly less at 8 years isn't terrible. That is, if he can deliver 40 or more points a season. I've heard people say the cap will go up, so then it won't be so bad. But how about, will he be able to produce at age 35, 36, or 37? It would be a great contract 3 years ago. Again, I'll say it, he's 29. That's from former D-man Mark. And another texter says, how far north of Taylor Hall's number would it have to be to sign Hyman to 4 or 5 years, or is he signing a 7 or 8 year deal only, worried that he would be bought out in year 4 if the oil offers 7 or 8? Yeah, it looks like Hall's going to get $6 million a year over 4 years. I think that's the latest report I saw. Ken Holland did, you know, reference today, if you can lower the AAV by spreading out the or by lengthening the contract, then he might look at doing that. Look, the Oilers obviously want to try and get something done here sooner rather than later. I mean, they know they got two awesome players. They know they got a passionate but long-suffering fan base that doesn't want to see first-round exits every year. They want to see the Oilers do some damage in the playoffs. You know, they know that McDavid is going to be an unrestricted free agent in 5 years, so I think they'd certainly like to do some damage in that time. So, you know, I think Ken Holland is thinking, if it's Zach Hyman and the way to get him is by offering him an extra year or two. It sounds like he's willing to do that, which leads me nicely into Gord Stellick from Leafs Lunch and Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. Gord, thanks for hopping on my show, man. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Boy, the Edmonton Oilers situation sounds so much like the Toronto Maple Leafs situation. You know, loaded up front, trying to settle, figure things out in D, and a fan base that really is tired of not making the playoffs or first-round exits.
Yeah. Well, and I want to talk to you about the Leafs situation, too, because obviously that was, tragic first-round losses for both our clubs in different ways a couple of months ago, for sure. I will start here. You know, and you're a former GM, and you're an excellent observer of the game. Let's say I'd never seen Zach Hyman play, or someone, you know, is trying to familiarize themselves with Zach Hyman. What would your scouting report be of the young man?
Boy, it certainly surprised me. He's consummate, you know, the consummate team guy that goes out and does whatever it takes as far as digging the puck up to out to feed the star players. And that's something Mike Babcock talked about. You know, Pavel Datsyuk always talked to him in Detroit. You can't just have snipers. Someone's got to go dig the puck out. And that was what, you know, he was renowned for being unafraid to go in the greasy corners, not being pretty, the ever-ready charger, bunny rabbit, whatever it may be. And then all of a sudden, 2 years ago, he started scoring goals. Like, he started doing like Brad Marchand's done, like whatever, up his goal-scoring total on top of it. So, you know, there's bigger marquee names. John Tavares was a first-round pick, not by the Leafs. Austin Matthews was another first overall pick, like Tavares. Marner, high first round pick. Nylander, high first round pick. You know, Hyman's a guy was drafted later by the Florida Panthers and came over at a nondescript trade. So on the ice, I described him. But the other intangible, he's one of those guys that you love to see, jumps up from the minor leagues and then right away swims in this, for whatever reason, assimilates himself and swims in the deep end of the NHL pool.
So maybe this is a bit of a obtuse question, but I'll throw it at you anyway, because I know you're a good fielder. Does his game fit better with McDavid or better with Draisaitl, or is that maybe not an overly relevant concern?
Well, you know what's happened. John Tavares, he's fit well with whomever. Tavares, Austin Matthews, you name it. I mean, played on the third line at times that way. So really, those kind of guys, I mean, they can get the puck themselves. They're skilled players in that. But if you got someone that can take advantage of their skill and feed them, you know, then that's what he's done. So it's interesting because the Edmonton model is kind of like the Toronto model about high-end elite players. And that's why it's going to be a void in Toronto not having the Zach Hyman. I don't know who replaces the Zach Hyman in Toronto if, in fact, as expected, this happens in Edmonton.
Well, I'm encouraged, and look, his point total is quite respectable, and it's certainly a huge upgrade over Dominic Cahoon, for example, who basically was in that role last year. And I like what you say about the puck retrieval and being able to get the puck to the big guys, because too often with the Oilers, McDavid or Draisaitl had to gain the zone, and they had to chase down the loose puck, and then they and they had to get the shot away or get the pass away to somebody else. So it'd be good to have that that element of someone along the wall a little bit.
Well, no, absolutely. And to go back to your point, you're discussing and reading some of the text, though. And again, I'm not in Ken Holland's shoes, so obviously the security is a huge factor in what is going to sway Zach Hyman to come to Edmonton or not. But you're right, contractually, anybody over, say, 26, 27, I'm not giving 7 or 8 year contracts if I can avoid it. But if that's what the price it takes in the short term, and you mentioned McDavid has 5 years left, Austin Matthews has 3 years left before his UFA. So, I mean, we're not saying those guys are both going to leave their respective teams. But, yeah, you expect to get somewhere big when you have those guys. I mean, these are the two best number one overall picks in a long, long time. I mean, it's not like Nico Hischier or someone like that, and that's not disrespecting him. So with two teams being kind of similar, this is a big gain for the Edmonton Oilers and a big loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it is. I mean, somebody just texted it. How does Toronto let this guy go? I mean, they just out of money, aren't they? I mean, is that the simple answer?
And totally. He took a 4-year contract at $2.25 million. He kind of took. I never like using the word hometown discount or haircut when you're talking seven figures, but, you know, it's all relative. But his belief was, you know, there was a team concept. And the Boston Bruins, I use them as an excellent example because Tampa Bay, it's understood. You know, they won a couple of Stanley Cups and that, so you really want to be there. And they always talk about the no state tax. Well, in Boston, that's an expensive city to live in, okay? And so many guys want to be there and have, you know, made certain deals that are, again, team-friendly. It's more team-friendly to have team success, and that's why Taylor Hall is keen to stay on there. In Toronto, Zach Hyman did that. Nobody else did. William Nylander went tooth and nail till the 11th hour to get his. Mitch Marner was able to hit the mother load. Auston Matthews did as well. They're all great players, though. I mean, there's no dog contract among them, but you run out of money. And next year it could be Morgan Riley that you're out of money. His contract's up at $5 million. And these are important guys. Like, these are important players to have, much like I mentioned those Boston players. I mean, Morgan Riley and Zach Hyman. Like, you know, if you're going to grow and evolve as a team, you need guys that are day oneers. Even though Zach Hyman was drafted by Florida, he's basically a day one or Leaf. Like, you know, look at Tampa. You know, look at those teams. Like, you have to have a decent quantity of those guys.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's been an issue for the Oilers, too. I mean, I know a lot has gone wrong, especially when they missed the playoffs 10 years in a row. Their draft record has not been strong. So then you're scrambling for free agents or trades to try to fill in those holes. Hopefully some of the recent draft picks are going to pan out. Gord Stellick joining us tonight from Leafs Lunch, Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto, talking about the possibility, and again, it has not actually happened, but it could happen, of Zach Hyman becoming an Edmonton Oiler. Okay, you referenced that maybe some similarities between these two teams with goal prevention being an issue. You know, the Oilers have brought Mike Smith back. They have lost Adam Larson, which I think is a significant loss. They'll have to do something there. What are the Leafs doing, or what can they plan to do to improve their goal prevention in the season ahead?
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned a tough one with Oscar Klefbom being hurt too, and, you know, see about Tyson Barrie when you talk about Edmonton, and that's kind of the dilemma the Leafs have faced the last couple of years. TJ Brody was a real pleasant acquisition last year. That was a good read, fit in really well. And Justin Hall's been the pleasant surprise. Like, up front, your Zach Hyman fill-in, you want to be like Zach Hyman was 6 years ago, or like Justin Hall, for whatever reason, has found himself able to do with the Leafs the last couple of years. So they went with the 4-4 protecting players rather than 3-7, which cost you two spots up front. But that's how highly they think of Justin Hall. And the next thing is Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren. You know, you've got the same thing in Edmonton about the young D, and particularly these are both first-round picks. So at some point, you know, you're hoping they're able to make that jump to the NHL. So, you know, that's what they have. You throw in Jake Muzzin that way. You throw in Morgan Riley on a contract year, and it's a decent enough core. Zach Bogosian, I don't think he's coming back. And, man, he was a really good find for, what, $1 million or something like that. But again, it'll come down to those two younger players. And Travis Dermott is still there as well. So it's not an elite core, but it's a good enough core. And hopefully it's like if everybody can kind of up their game 10 or 15 or 20%, which quite often happens on a winning team. Like, you got a winning team going, and it's easier to up your game when you have confidence and all these other kinds of things, then that would be huge for the D core.
How did you, and we'll flash back here because you mentioned it, and look, we know what it's like in Canada when you have a tough playoff loss. It becomes part of the team's lore, for better or for worse. Why couldn't they finish it off against the Canadiens? Was it just Carey Price? And I know somebody, I know some Toronto people have said that they just didn't show up in Game 7, that it wasn't an inspired effort. How did you look at all that?
Yeah, you know, Reed, it's funny because only one team has a satisfactory ending to the season. They hoist the Stanley Cup. But you have others like the Florida Panthers, Minnesota Wild, that, you know, are happy enough with their playoff effort. Boy, in that Scotia North division, like I always said, there's going to be two pissed off teams that don't make the playoffs. And I wasn't including Ottawa because they're in the rebuild. And obviously the Calgary and Vancouver fans are that way. Well, then all three of the other fan bases felt the same the way they got eliminated. Horrible ways, like to be swept in four, like what happened with Edmonton, what happened with Winnipeg, or to be up 3-1 and lose three in a row and not be able to close it out with Toronto. Just horrible, horrible ways to end a season. And Reed, this is twice. This happened against Columbus last year. Okay, a couple of years ago, they had a chance to win against Boston in Game 6, a great chance to close them up. They're up 1-0, didn't do it. Then the usual Game 7, which... anything can happen, so they lost. Okay, so be it. Last 2 years, disappointing, discouraging, inexcusable, and unbelievable lack of whatever the it factor is in the playoffs. and particularly in the fifth and deciding game against Columbus in the bubble, and the seventh and deciding game against the Montreal Canadiens. Like games five and six, they dug themselves a hole, they came back, and then they blew it with a gaffe in overtime. Okay, fine, it's still not a game. You know, and I'm tired. Stop the John Tavares injury. That was a very graphic moment that was horrifying when you saw it. The good news is he's okay. Everybody has injuries. Please stop the – but big on making excuses that way. You're up 3-1 without John Tavares, okay? You come back and won those games, and that's the disappointing part. And you know, in Edmonton case, I think there's a little bit more optimism given what was expected and, you know, where they went in that. In Toronto's case, fans are walking around like they've taken a standing eight count in a boxing ring. You know that feeling where you go to the corner for – you're not knocked out, but you know, can wait 8 seconds and then see if you can fight again, whatever. Because it's just – It's not even breaking down the minutiae of certain games. It's like, really? Do you guys, you know, I never question the heart of players and that. I'm not doing it here because up to those last three games, they had a great season. It was a great season. They did everything right. Everything, you know, first place overall, first place in the division and coming back and getting signature wins when they most needed them and that. And then when you're writing your final exam and it counts for 50% of your mark and you get 5 on it, so you flunk the course, right. That's basically what they did.
That's an interesting way to put it. I might steal that one, borrow for some of my analysis. That's good.
No
Gord, before I let you go, I always try to get a story from your time in the front office with the Leafs in the late 80s. I believe you were at the helm for the 1988 draft. Leafs took Scott Pearson. There were some pretty good players that went in the next 5 picks. What do you remember about that year, if anything, in taking Pearson?
Well, I do remember there's some really good players like Rod Brind'Amour and Jeremy Roenick and Bill Guerin that went. We did get Ty Domi in the second round, and that was considered a surprise because he wasn't ranked in the top 3 rounds by Central Scouting. And we were watching him play in Peterborough with a guy named Mike Ricci and really was improving his game there. So happy with that one. It's funny, you look at that first round, and after Modano and Trevor Linden, like Quebec had 2 picks, 3rd and 5th, and they got Curtis Decision. And you, Daniel Dorey, Pittsburgh got Darren Shannon, you know. And so we spent the night debating about taking, was it Martin Jelena or Scotty Pearson? And we went back and forth about that. We liked him, Ontario Hockey League kid, tough kid that way. I got to say, you know, we didn't have the resources. A lot of teams didn't then to scout Timo Solani in Europe or, you know, some of the American, you know, guys that way. We were a little bit limited that way. Scott Pearson was a really, really good young man. You had him in Edmonton later on, and he lives in Atlanta now. I actually keep in touch with him that way. But we were happy to get him in the draft. But it's funny, just, you know, like picks 3 through our pick were guys that didn't really pan out. And then there was about 7 or 8 that, you know, really – a bevy of guys that had solid NHL careers, starting with Bill Guerin. I'm getting my drafts wrong. Bill Guerin was another year, but starting with those other guys like Brind'Amour and Timo Solani and I guess was it? I don't know if Jeremy Roenick
was
year, whatever.
Yeah, Roenick was 8.
Yeah, boy, the pain. Yes, yes. You know, Jeremy Roenick. You like those guys? Pat LaFontaine had done it earlier. That there was a big question about how you graded American high school hockey. So, you know, guys would come and play in usually the Quebec Junior Hockey League, but, you know, Mike Modano did it and came out and played in Prince Albert. Like, you know, that was sort of a bit more of a litmus test back then to, you know, get in the more competitive hockey back then. So anyway, you know, fun memories. Ty Domi's my best memory about that in the second round.
Yeah. Gord, I always love having you on. Thanks for checking in tonight. I know it's a little later out there for you. Hope your show is going well. Hope you're having a great summer. Let's do this again soon.
Anytime, Reed. Pleasure.
Gord Stellick checking in from Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. So, you know, he said what I'm sure a lot of you are thinking. Zach Hyman would help the Oilers, but man, oh man, at the age of 29, and he just turned 29 on June 9th, 7 or 8 year deal. It appears that is what is on tap, if indeed he does become an Edmonton Oiler. To sign him to 8 years, he'd have to be Oilers property to get that extension, so they'd have to work out some sort of a trade with Toronto here in the next 5 or 6 days. 780-496-0063. It's an interesting one to discuss. You'll hear more from Ken Holland as well. It's Inside Sports on Chet.
¶¶
That's likely going to be outdated very soon. Ken Holland saying today that unlikely that Jujhar Khaira will get a qualifying offer from the Oilers, and that would mean he would become an unrestricted free agent. Don says, good interview with Stelic from Toronto. Happy you didn't run down the Leafs as you sometimes do. LOL. That's from Don. I am a bit of a troll with the Leafs sometimes. Leafs and Rough Riders. I can't help myself sometimes. I apologize in advance. We'll go to the CertainTeed hotline. Jeff has called in. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, Reed. I'm just curious about the Carey Price, where they did not protect him for Montreal either. That was that, if you can tell me, was that something that was set up in advance where you knew about it and no hard feelings? They felt that he wouldn't be taken? Or yep. Does that leave him just absolutely sour with the organization?
Well, they had to ask him to waive his no move clause to be available. I don't think that they would be sour, because I think that the Habs were gambling that they wouldn't take Price because he makes so much money and because there are some injury concerns. So it sounds like Price understood the risk, and he probably would have been okay with going to Seattle if it happened.
I just saw a lot of reports that he was very likely someone that they actually would take, if not just to be a marquee player for the fans or what have you. But that would, to me, was a heck of a risk for Montreal from a fan standpoint.
Yeah. Would you cheer for the Habs?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. Did you hear Brian Wilde on with me the other night from Global Montreal?
No, I did not.
Yeah, he's always good. And I said, what does your gut tell you, Brian? And he said, I don't think they'll take Price just because he would take up 13% of their salary cap. that's a lot when you look at it that way.
I understand the price cap, but for a startup team to have a marquee player like that, like you say, that draws fans. That's a banner.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think it would have been interesting if it would have went there. Like, that's one of the best players of the last 20 years starting off your franchise. Oh, I hear you. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, 780-496-0063. If you want to talk to me like Jeff just did, get to some of your texts as well. We'll discuss Zach Hyman, more from Ken Holland. Jody Shelley's coming up all ahead.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.